I love these books of the Old Testament, and especially I find the ones that interest me and have taught me very much. For some strange reason, I've not been able quite to put my finger on the reason why, are the books that are written about women. Maybe it's because I live with six women, and I get lonesome away from home. I don't know just what it is. But the books of Ruth, Esther, and the Song of Solomon have taught me probably more about Christian living than any other books in the Bible. And I am always delighted for an opportunity to speak about them. I think this would be a good night to ask you how many have read the book of Ruth today. Would you raise your hand? Oh, that's much better. Aren't you glad I didn't ask you about Deuteronomy? Four chapters in Ruth, that's all. But what a delightful book. Perhaps many of you remember the story of Benjamin Franklin when he was the ambassador of the United States to France. Was a member for a time of a infidels club in France. That is, not a member. He attended it from time to time. And they spent most of their time reading literary masterpieces and searching for literary masterpieces. And on one occasion, he took the Book of Ruth and he changed the names in it so it wouldn't be recognizable as a Bible book. And he read this book to the club when it was gathered together. And when he finished, they were unanimous in praise of this book. They said it was one of the most beautiful short stories they'd ever heard. And they demanded that he tell them where he'd run across such a remarkable literary masterpiece. And it was his great delight to tell them that it was from the Bible that they professed to regard with such scorn and derision, and felt that there was nothing good could come from it. Now, the book of Ruth is a literary masterpiece. It's a beautiful story of a romance. I don't know how they would feature this in some of our romance magazines today. I can almost see the headlines advertising this in a magazine like True Romance. It would be something like, how one woman found happiness in the arms of a second husband. Something like that. But it's a book that inflames the imagination when you read it through. Because entwined all through it is the story of love and romance. And this is always a captivating theme. But though it is a beautiful story in itself, as a literary masterpiece, it's the story behind the story that is the fascinating thing about the book of Ruth. It's a charming story, but what that story means and signifies is simply fascinating. And I hope you learn to read your Old Testament from that point of view, of looking for the story behind the story. For this is another one of those beautiful pictures that is a visual aid designed by God Himself to illustrate the dramatic truths of the Christian faith. All the New Testament truths are lived out for us in blood and flesh in these Old Testament characters. And this is certainly true of the book of Ruth. It's a story of the romance of redemption. And the four chapters of this book trace for us in a rather rough fashion, but in rough division at least, the four major steps of the work of redemption. It begins with an introduction to the characters of the book in the first five verses. We read, in the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land, and a certain man of Bethlehem named in Judah went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. The name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife Naomi. And the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem in Judah. They went into the country of Moab and remained there. But Elimelech, the husband of Naomi, died, and she was left with her two sons. These took Moabite wives. The name of the one was Orpah, and the name of the other, Ruth. They lived there about 10 years, and both Mahlon and Chilion died, so that the woman was bereft of her two sons and her husband. Now, in those five short verses, we're introduced to a series of personalities. And we'll discover that these persons are the key to this book. And the key to the persons are their names. So that we need to know the names of these individuals. This is one of the clues to making the Old Testament a living book, is to learn to look up the meaning of the names of the characters that are featured in prominent places in the Old Testament story. For God has hidden away great truths in these Bible names. Now, it begins with a man whose name was Elimelech. And Elimelech means, "My God is King." And in that name, you have comprehended in one short word the whole doctrine of man. My God is King. It begins with God, just as the Bible begins with God. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And it's the God who is, the God who exists. Remember that the Bible never argues the existence of God. From beginning to end, you will never find any apologetic dissertations on whether God exists or does not exist. The Bible starts with the fact of God. You can't go back at that. All the arguments as to the existence of God are mere philosophical speculations. They never will get you anywhere. The existence of God is a matter that rests wholly upon the innate revelation of the human heart. Man either admits that God exists or he denies it, one or the other. He is built to recognize the existence of God. If he doesn't recognize that, there's no hope for him, because as Hebrews 11:6 tells us, if anyone would draw near to God, he must believe that God is. God is. That's the beginning. He must believe that God is. And it isn't difficult to believe that God is. Light from God is streaming into us all around. What is difficult is to believe that God isn't. And it's only those who are educated beyond their intelligence who ever arrive at that point, where they finally talk themselves into believing that God isn't. But the whole story of man begins with that great fact, God is. But it's more than that. It's the God who is my God. My God is King. And that means that the God who is available to me as a man. That the God who exists and made the world, the creator of the universe, has made himself completely available unto man. And that's why that verse in Hebrews 11:6 goes on to say, if any would draw near to God, if any man would come to God, let him believe that God is, and that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. If anyone wants to find God, let him seek him, and he will find. Jesus said so. Seek and ye shall find. And the only reason a man never finds God is because he never bothers to seek. If we seek God, we will find. And any man who wants to come to God and discover the reality of God and grasp the fact of God and experience the person of God simply needs to begin to seek God, because when he seeks, he shall find. God is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. He makes himself available step by step unto the man who begins to look. Therefore, he becomes my God. And this is what man was in his innocency. You remember in the 8th Psalm, we read that remarkable statement of David. When I consider the heavens, the works of thy fingers, the moon and the stars, which thou hast ordained, what is man, he says, what is man, that thou art mindful of him, and the son of man, that thou visiteth him? And then he answers his own question. Thou hast crowned him with glory and honor, and made him to have dominion over all the works of thy hands. And there you come to the third fact in that name. My God is King. My God is King. Man was given dominion over all the universe, over all the things that God had made. But only as he himself was subject to the dominion of the God who made him. And as he exercised, as he was subject himself to the dominion of God, my God, all that thou art available to me, he began to exercise dominion over all the rest of the world.